Hello, this is Heather Tetrangelo. I am the creator of Systemic Renewal, and I believe that no one and no situation is ever too far gone. Welcome back, everyone, to Never Too Far Gone. This is Heather Tetrangelo. This week's podcast is part of the Following Favours series, and today is brought to you with Brooklyn White, a renewalist, a social worker, and the founder of Renewing Hope Agency in Canada. I first met Brooklyn at Co last year. She is bubbly, sweet, fun, and most of all, a very smart and insightful change leader. Brooklyn has worked in community development since graduating from social work in 2017. She is a dedicated community developer with a passion for creating meaningful change within organizations. She's had the privilege of collaborating with diverse groups, focusing on development, program innovation, and enhancing overall organizational effectiveness. At the heart of her agency, Renewing Hope Agency, lies a commitment to three core areas that she serves in. The first is transformative legacy building, the second, ethical leadership training, and thirdly, supporting challenging new initiatives. Please welcome to the stage, Brooklyn White.
Yeah, I was going to say I think there's no better time for systemic renewal than right now. I think we have this ability to be history repeaters. And I think something new has to come in to disrupt the patterns that we so often fall into. And what's really neat about systemic renewal is it disrupts the history by talking about the history. I think what we fail to do sometimes is to discuss, okay, why do we actually think this way? Why do we actually perceive the world this way or operate this way? Or why do we believe what we believe? And so that's what I love about systemic renewal is it disrupts the pattern because it forces you to talk about what's happened and how we cannot repeat history again. So I think there's no better time for that than right now.
Yeah. It's almost as though for all of the good that the Enlightenment did and all of the good that this more individualistic notion of freedom is for us, that we've forgotten that we do things collectively, but we've also all stepped into systems where we've inherited a lot of historical forming of norms and ideas, and we are embodying them and taking them on board often without even realizing it. And it's kind of, recognizing that we never stepped into a clean slate when we started a new role in a new organization or when we stepped into an industry. We literally are born into systems generations in the making, right?
Yes. That's such a good point too about stepping into a new role, but bringing the trauma that you've endured at previous places with you. I know that's something interesting that I've gone through in the last year is learning to heal from what's happened while understanding that while it may feel the same, it's not the same. So, yeah.
So what I wanted to talk to you about today was those two things. The sector that you've been in is social work. I want to talk with you a bit about your experience of that, but also, how do you heal and continue to work within a system when you've experienced heartbreak or setbacks or even abuse? So I guess those are the two thoughts I have, but we'll see where it goes.
I think it's my experience is personal. So yeah. I think I'd probably just have to start with my story.
Yeah, let's go there.
Yeah, my story began, in high school. It's funny you asked me, how did I get into social work? And I'm like, are you sure you want to know that story? Because it's very unorthodox, but most of my story is when I was in high school, I had absolutely zero idea. It's interesting. They make you feel like at the age of 15, you have to know exactly who you want to be. And so I think that people just knew where I was supposed to end up. So my high school career counselor, she printed off a social work program and said, I think you'd be really good at this. And I was like, what even is this? And I looked at it and it said social work. And I was like, okay. And it's funny because for the entire 4 years that I was in high school, I had that printout on my end table. So every morning and every night, I would see that before I went to bed and when I woke up. And I had no idea why she said I would be good at this. And I think that's what intrigued me about it, was because I didn't understand why I would be specifically good at this thing. So when it came time to apply for universities in Canada, I applied for social work, communications, and English, because I actually really wanted to be an English teacher. And so, which most people don't know about me, I was very much into in high school. And so I got accepted to all three, and I couldn't get social work past me. Like, as much as I wanted to become an English teacher, that thought of you'd be really good at this just kind of was like ingrained into my brain. So I accepted social work, and I went into my first year of social work school and absolutely hated it.
Wow.
It was
Great
awful.
story. I mean, you've already got two themes there. One is how sometimes other people see things in you before you see them in yourself. And two is really bad experiences aren't necessarily a sign it's the wrong path.
That's exactly it. And so what made me hate it so much was I felt like I was propelled into like the school of depressive life circumstances. Like, every single day in social
And
work school,
depressive life circumstances. Let's call the academy that.
like, every single day I would show up to class and they'd be like, here's another thing that's wrong with the world, and it's your responsibility to fix it. And I'm like, awesome, this is really depressing. So in my first year of social work school, I actually fell into a depressive episode because I felt like, oh my gosh, there is so much wrong with the world, and it's on us to fix it. And how the heck are we supposed to do that? And so they were teaching us these modalities for healing people and bringing people through pain and bringing people through their life's depressive life circumstances. And it felt, and I remember it back then thinking, like, does this actually work? Does this actually get to? And I remember, it's funny because even back then we were learning about the three levels of social work: micro, meso, and macro. And right away I knew I'm not a micro person. I'm not an individuals person. I'm not a one-on-one crisis person, because from the very first moment that I started social work school, I was like, okay, but what are the deeper root issues? What's like it, I didn't even want to focus on like the individual counseling or, and I did all that because it was part of my program, but I remember a professor saying to me, like, you are one of the very few who are going to deal with the system itself. And
Yes.
I couldn't believe that. And so it was interesting for me even back then that people saw, like, okay, she's not just taking everything at face value. She wants to understand what's underneath all this. And so I felt like, because I wasn't a one-on-ones person, because for me it was, okay, I could sit with someone for an hour and I'm not demeaning that work at all. It's important and worthy work. I was like, I fully believe in the one-on-one work. It's so worthy. It's such important work. But for me, I was like, I want to get to the systems that is causing harm for people to begin with. Like, I want to remove the systemic harm that's causing people to have to go into therapy and to have to go into these modalities of healing, right? And so I think for me, even back then, I ended up switching schools because I couldn't handle the school that I started in. So I ended up in a different school, and I was very thankful for those professors because they really saw the systemic thinker that I was, and they really held space for that. And so I had two professors who really nurtured the systems thinker in me. And so I don't think I would be who I am today without those two professors, because they really nurtured that mindset. And I would often sit in her office, one of them, and say, like, okay, why is it like this? Like, I would just like sit there and be like, please explain it to me. Why is it like this? And I think that's how my systems mind started, was just sitting in my professors' offices, asking them to explain why the world was this way and why these systems existed the way that they did. And so I don't know if my career counselor in high school knew that I would end up on that path, but it's where I ended up. But yeah, that's how
So
I started.
you're a renewalist, you're a leader of change in
Yeah.
the system. And how has that unfolded in terms of after you graduated, stepping into that kind of work, and what's that experience been like? And have you found companions on the journey who have the same passion?
Yeah, so I graduated in 2018 from Honors Social Work, and literally like the day after I graduated, I started in my very first social work job, and I was working at a youth center for youth ages 13 to 18. And what I originally got hired for, it was funny that we kind of ended up just building out a role, and I ended up doing prevention programming for youth. So rather than doing the crisis intervention work, I cared about building systems and programs that allowed for crisis prevention. So literally my first job, I'm already doing prevention work. And so as much as I think I was just anti-intervention from like literally the first day of social work school. And again, it's not that those practices aren't valuable, because they're definitely needed, but it's just not the way I was built. And it's interesting because in my graduating class of social workers, I was the only one who went to macro level social work. Everybody else in my class was micro level. So it's very interesting to be literally the only one in social work school who went macro. And so from there, I definitely was propelled into like the daily functionings of an organization. But then again, I always questioned why everything was the way it was. I was kind of like instead of just lots of people go into social work to change the system. And while I didn't inherently go into social work for that reason, I think that found me. And so I was always questioning, okay, why do we do it this way? Why do we operate this way? Why do we function this way? Why is it doing this? And so I was just, and that did not always sit well with my leadership, because they felt as though I was questioning their choices and questioning their decision-making abilities. But really, I was just trying to figure out why we do things the way we do them. And so, to be transparent, no, I ended up working since 2018 in the field, and it wasn't until I found your program that I felt like there was anyone out there who was like me at all. I felt very alone. And when you end up alone in those spaces, you are made to feel like there's something wrong with you, because you're the only voice saying, no, this isn't right. This isn't the way we should be doing this. There's a better way. And so when you're that only voice versus like 100 other people, you're like, okay, well, it must be me. There must be something wrong with me, because why else would I be the only voice saying, no, this is not the right way to do this? So it literally wasn't until I found your brochure, which made me bawl my eyeballs out, that I even felt there was any hope that there were people out there like me who loved the system so much that they didn't want it to remain the same.
So good.
So, yeah.
It's interesting to me because kind of what I hear you describing is something of a cycle of abuse of you having this kind of gaslighting or this constantly being put back on you, that if you're questioning the system or you're raising these questions, there's something wrong with you, so that we don't have to look at what might be wrong with us collectively.
Right, yeah. And it's interesting that I did that even in my education component. Like I was even questioning while obtaining my education, is this the right way? Is this the way we should be educating people and teaching people? And but again, I was always made to feel like the system's so much bigger than me, and I just need to become a part of it, and fix it from within, which I think so many social workers, even I know of people who have been brutally abused by the system here in Canada, so they become social workers to fix the system from within, and they just end up in abusive workplaces that cause them harm, and then they feel like they're the problem. And so I do see this cycle where people go into social work to try and fix the system, but then are abused by it because they're different thinkers.
I'm just thinking about my own experience in education systems and in universities and also in the church, and how, if we were to assume that most people go into this kind of work because they care and they want to make a positive impact in the lives of others, and that people that don't fit that category are few, like if we were to assume that for a moment, I think there's an aspect of there's often a really huge amount of personal sacrifice and struggle that comes with staying in these kind of professions that are about helping others or educating, and that often aren't valued or really seen by society in helpful ways. And so years of that, when it culminates, it can be easy to feel like, well, I have given so much of myself to this, or I have sacrificed so much, or I have literally put years of my time on earth into this system, and to be told that we could have done it better all along can be really wounding to even consider, right? Because what does that mean about the value of what I've given and what I've been a part of for all of that time? And does that mean I've wasted time? And yeah, I guess a big part of renewal for me is, how do we massage that?
How do we communicate that? I think it's looking at what a lot of the work that I do is looking at the fruits of the mindsets we hold. And so in my work at Renewing Hope Agency, I often talk about, with the organizations I'm working with, what is being produced as a result of the mindsets you hold. And so whether it's less about personal individual work, but rather organizational mindsets and behaviors that are producing certain results. But then again, mindsets are very personal and values are very personal, and those get brought into workspaces. But how do those individual mindsets cultivate organizational mindsets, which then produce certain fruit? And so I think that that's important to talk about. But again, you're right. It's very personal.
Yeah.
It's very personal.
Yeah. When we see that word mindset written in a post about systems change, that just sounds like a concept, but it's really about people's lives, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
And their sense of belonging and their sense of identity and their sense of worth is totally tied up in all of this.
Yeah. It absolutely is. And I've seen that in the smaller nonprofits that I work with that are run by this small group of incredibly caring and empathetic individuals. I don't think that a lot of what they do is intentionally harmful. Like, it's not, they don't intend for it to be harmful. In fact, they do a lot of it because they deeply care, and they believe that this is the best way to show that they deeply care. And so for us as renewalists to walk in and say, actually, no, you know what I mean? Like, how do you go about having those conversations? And so what I like to do is I like to call out their gold and remind them that you're doing this because you love people and you love serving people. Is there a better way we could be doing that? And it's not even that it's better. Is that more ethical even? Or, you know, so yeah, those conversations are definitely not easy. And I think what a lot of people expect is 35-year-old mindsets to change in 3 to 5 business days, you know? And so I'm definitely guilty of that, where I've walked into spaces and I'm like, why is this so hard to change this 35-year-old mindset? I'm like, oh yeah, because it's 35 years old and it's been existing and walking around for ages. And you can't just fix something in 3 days that somebody has been doing for 35 years.
I like the way you say walking around. I'm thinking of a mindset as a person walking around in the room now, being a member of the team. So I'm wondering, in the social work sector, what would be a mindset that you would really like to see leave the room or change? And if it was a person, how would you describe them? What would they look and feel like to be in the room with?
And so what I've often seen within leaders is how they respond is according to the situation. So that would be situational ethics. So how they would act in any given moment is according to the situation. But I'd love to see that reversed, where leaders are empowered to know who they are in every situation. And that doesn't change regardless of circumstance. And so I think that would bring a lot of steadfastness to the social services system in Canada, I know for sure, because it would allow leaders to operate from the same place rather than changing their morals and values according to situations. And so that's kind of a mindset that I've seen and perceived is people react according to situations that are in front of them. But I'd love to see that reversed and see leaders empowered to operate from an ethical framework that they can almost find peace in.
This is very similar to what Brené Brown's work says about knowing your core values and letting those inform and drive your decisions. And
exactly,
I think in Rising Strong, she wrote about the idea that when you fall down flat on your face, which you will, the getting up and moving forward has to come from a place of deeply knowing what you stand for and what you believe. And
that's exactly it. That's exactly it. You know, I've seen leaders in my time, and this is what has caused me harm, was I've seen leaders tap. I've seen leaders act totally uncharacteristic to who I know they are as people when certain situations face them. And I think that's what's always caused me personal trauma is leaders who I believe in and trust in acting totally uncharacteristic because of situations in front of them. And that fractures your trust between you and your leader because you depend on them to be steadfast. And so when they act uncharacteristic, you're almost like, can I trust this person to lead us through this storm? Mm-hmm. And when that trust is fractured, it's really hard to rebuild within, because then you're a human being. So you start to view everything from that point through that lens of fractured trust. And it's really hard to come back from that, speaking from personal experience. And I've had to move on from organizations because I couldn't recover from seeing my leaders' morals and values and character change according to the situations in front of them. And so,
do you think the issue was that it was changeable, or was the issue that the real values weren't the stated values?
That's a good point, because I think for me, you know, something that I talk about literally all of the time is that organizations and leaders within them, they're really good at speaking values, but where I've seen a disconnect is in their operations. And so what I do through Renewing Hope Agency is I try to align their spoken values with their daily operations, because I've noticed that that's where a lot of harm comes from, is the misalignment between spoken values and the daily operations of an organization. Because I think a lot of people even come into organizations because they believe in the work and they believe in the values and they believe in the heart of the organization, but the daily operations of it aren't in alignment with the spoken values.
Yeah. And what you do really is what shows what you believe and what you spend money on. I think that's one of the main signs.
Yes.
Money. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
So to finish up, can you share about a time that you have fallen over and how have you stayed in the system or gone back into working in the sector? And what values helped you do that?
So last year, around June time, I ended up taking a leave of absence from work because I was struggling to, well, my physical health was not okay, but also I was struggling to figure out if I could exist within the system anymore. And I had very little to no hope that, you know, I could remain within the system. And I was thankful for you at that time, because if I had not stumbled upon Co College of Renewal, I probably would have just retired at the prime age of 26. But, and, you know, so I think really you had asked me a person I found favor with, and I think it's you, where you have given me this hope that even on the days when I'm like, oh my gosh, the system is the worst, I'll just like text you and be like, Heather, the system sucks. And you're like, does it, or do you just need a minute? I'm like, I just need a minute. And so I think for me, it's finding the Co College of Renewal and understanding that I'm not alone, and understanding that there are people out there, because I used to believe that the reason we wanted to fix the system was because we didn't like it. But the truth is, we actually really love it. And we really love the institutions and the systems and the organizations we work for. And I think that mindset shift, you helped me to see that, Brooklyn, you're upset because you love it, not because you hate it. And so I think that that is the true core of a renewalist, is they love the system so much it breaks their heart when it's not operating at its full potential. And so I think if there are people out there who are like, man, I love the system so much, but my heart is so broken by it, you're probably a renewalist. And so if that is so, you should come find us in Switzerland, because there's a whole group of us. And really, that's what it took for me to get back on my feet, was to realize that I'm not alone, that there are people who love the system just as much as I do, and that it breaks their heart to their core when it is not operating at its full wholeness and potential. And so, yeah, for me, it was falling down and recognizing I wanted to change careers at 26, because I thought I hated the system, but in reality, I loved it so much, but I didn't see a way that we could actually change it until you.
Yay.
So.
I feel like you've described the middle ground that we've talked about before, about what a renewalist is and how a renewalist operates in this middle ground where you're not the kind of person that really wants to give all of your time to micro care work or micro attention with one-on-one, even though it might be a portion of your work. And you described that earlier in our conversation. But you're also not the person that wants to kind of stand outside of a system and analyze it and think about it through a systems framework without actually being involved in it or committed to it on any level. So there's this middle ground of, I think in a macro way, I want to make macro level change real, but I'm doing that from a place of, I actually love social work. I love what this system provides in society, and I believe in what it does, and I want, and it's who I am to be part of that, right?
And I think what's really hard for renewalists, is that the micro is valued so much more. And I think that's what made me feel really isolated and alone, was the micro is highly valued. And so often renewalists are seen as like an outlier, or almost like an anarchist, because you're trying to bring attention to a system that's really valued, like we talked about at the beginning, was how do we bring attention to the issues within a system that's really loved by those who work in it every day. And so I think that's what can be a point of contention for renewalists, is they feel like they have to remove themselves from the system because they aren't valued within it. And so I think that's something that your program has the ability to change, is the mindset that micro is more valuable than meso or macro.
Yeah, can I want to say something that I think about that.
Please do.
I sometimes think that, and some people really are wired for predominantly that micro level work. So, as you say, I think that is important to affirm as well. But I think the reason that systems often favor it, quite honestly, is that it's easy to hide behind we're doing this meaningful one-on-one work with people. Therefore, we can feel good about what we're doing and we can feel like we're winning. And we don't have to think about more broadly what we could be doing better.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Especially in kind of caring or support work or educative work, where there is an immediate sense of reward when you meet with someone and work with someone one-on-one, right? You can kind of fill your sense of purpose with daily experiences of, oh, I've just made a difference to that person, or,
The dopamine hits from
well, yeah,
from
it's real, right?
being. It is, and renewalists do not experience that as frequently. And so I think that's why it's so crucial to be in touch with the front line, because you kind of need a reminder of why you're doing this to begin with. And so, yeah, the renewalists don't have that immediate dopamine hit. If they ever get one, I'm not sure. But
My
yeah.
theory is definitely that being connected at that micro level is important to doing the job well. It's like the school principal who needs to be in the classroom at least once a week, just teaching maths. I do believe in that, because it's about staying connected to the experience of the individuals you're actually leading or serving. And you can't get a read on the mindset of a system without being in touch with those experiences, I don't think.
Very much so. I think renewalists are the brave ones who ask the hard questions, you know? And I'm not saying that there are others who don't ask those same hard questions, but I think it's renewalists are willing to put their lives on the line to go deeper.
Yeah. The Academy of Systemic Renewal is based in Melbourne, and so we acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.